Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. Today, I will be speaking with good friend and new member of the SOM TV family, Shakira Jones. She hosts a show currently right now on SOM TV called Weekly Wine, where she just really takes categories of wine and picks what she thinks you guys should try and drink, especially over the summer. You know, Rieslings that are not from Germany, or rosés, or bubbles that are not champagne. You know, really fun little categories. I just want to make it clear, I love this girl. She is the sweetest, funniest. She is just hilarious. But also wicked smart. So she has been asked by me to start a podcast. It is called A Glass for Every Palate. And she'll be interviewing chefs and winemakers and all sorts of people around the world about the wines that got them into wine and a number of influences that influenced them in a large conversation about that. It's going to be excellent. Some of her guests are incredible. So that is right now up on iTunes, Podomatic, any of the places you get your podcasts. So subscribe to that. We're going to talk about that and many other things on the show, A Glass for Every Palate. But before that, I want to say we have dropped our pricing. We have made our pricing $5.99 a month and $49.99 a year, in American dollars at least. So there's, you know, we're trying to make it as accessible as possible for everybody to have SOM TV. And we have some pretty incredible stuff coming. We have two more feature films that I have directed, one about the real story of the Judgment of Paris, which has unprecedented support from all of the original winemakers, original wineries. We have a lot of the original vintages being opened up in the film. I don't think anybody's seen anything like this from a standpoint of that particular topic, its influence and a lot of other things, the fallout. We sort of touched it in Psalm 3, but not like this. And then, of course, we have our next Psalm film, which is called The Cup of Salvation. That will be coming to SOM TV as well. I have a film called The Whole Animal coming. We have several competition series. It's, you know, if you are a geek like I am about wine and food and a lot more coming, especially in the travel space, we're going to make it worth it to you. So $49.99 a year. That's SOMTV.com, and you can stream it on almost every device worldwide. Also, I would like to know what we're going to do, a mailbag episode here coming up, and I want to know questions you have. If you have questions you'd like me or any other guests to answer, I want you to send them to hello@somtv.com. I'm looking for good questions. Give me some stuff. We will do an Ask Me Anything, and I will go through a number of questions. So hello@somtv.com. I want to hear your questions. Without further ado, it is my honor to introduce you to Shakira Jones, who is joining the SOM TV podcast team with her own podcast and much more to come on the network. All right. I am here with Shakira Jones. Shakira, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am too sober at the moment for the way the day's gone.
Man, yeah. Same.
Yeah. Well, that's we may have a problem.
We'll work on that.
Yeah, we'll work on that. All right. So I'm beyond honored to welcome you to the SOM TV family. This is a big deal.
It really is. I can't believe that.
For me. I'm sure for you, this is, you know.
Are you kidding me? This is a super big deal.
Yeah, I want people to understand. So you have been in my life for quite a long time and in a lot of different ways. You and I met, I think, through Laura Manick, who's now Laura Fioravanti, Master Somm in New York at Cork Buzz. And we've seen each other there several times. But it wasn't until the Somm 3 premiere. I guess first we should say who you are, right, Shakira?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. So Shakira, how would you describe yourself in the wine business? What do you
do? I think that I would describe myself as kind of like a tour guide and an ambassador. I found myself in wine through Fine Dining, which is the blog that I started, Black Girls Dine Too. And just through those incredible meals at those incredible places with those incredible people, wine just became an integral part of the dining experience. And, you know, I started that blog because I went out to eat a lot and didn't see many people that looked like me in a lot of these places. And as I dived into wine and took a class here or there, it's like, shit, the same thing. It's just me all over again. And so I am just, by nature that type of person that when I see a space and I'm sort of the unicorn in the room, I always want more people that look like me in the room. And in order to do that, I just thought I had to dive all the way in. So I really started studying intensively. Laura and her entire team at QuarkBuzz are amazing, connected with people like Aldo Sam, Dustin, Dylan, Andre Mack, that just really, really poured so much knowledge into me. And here we are.
Yeah, I mean, well, also, you know, you're leaving off the fact that you've written for some major publications, you know, Food & Wine Magazine and
750 Daily.
I mean, Joe, you're a wine writer. I want your perspective on Somme TV for a number of reasons. One, I think I'm just gonna say it flat out. I think a lot of the wine business can get pretty jaded, and it's not necessarily anybody's fault. The more you drink, the more you know what's out there, and the more your palate kind of narrows, and the more you start to look at people who are walking into the wine business and you don't like what they like. And so one thing that I found with you that I just adore is you don't exhibit any of that. I mean, you are completely, and I say this because I know you, I've known you now for years. You don't have this kind of pretension at all. And that's what wine really, really needs right now, is it needs that stuff stripped away. You know, it's a pretty key thing in my opinion, having, you know, made these films and doing the platform and whatever else. I don't know if you consciously come at wine that way or if that's something that just sort of happens.
It's weird, right? In that I think that the pretension of wine is very different in America than it is in other places, where like wine in Europe, for instance, and South America, it's about the communal experience of it. It's about coming together and having food and just sharing.
Yeah, but there's, I mean, like, come on.
There's still pretension.
Come on.
I'm going somewhere with this, I promise.
Okay, I gotcha.
And inherently, in America, we're a little different. Top that off with the fact that wine is actually much more expensive and less approachable here, right? I happen to live in a major market where there's just an endless amount of anything. And so when it comes to the pretentiousness of it, I think I don't have that because it would never work in my favor, right? I get nothing out of, oh no, I don't want someone else that looks like me at this tasting because then I won't get invited to the next one. It doesn't really feel that way.
Interesting. It looks like me in what way? What do you mean?
I mean, I like diverse rooms. I don't like any space that is super homogenous because I think that when you have just representation of, and this is far beyond wine. If everyone looks the same and is the same, then you will only get one idea, one perspective, one experience shared, right? Which is limiting. And wine isn't supposed to be limiting. It's supposed to be this passport and gateway to so much, to history, to people, to place. And so having homogenous environments around wine is just, it's kind of like the opposite of what it is. So for me to not be pretentious about it, it's kind of like, look, it tastes good. And sometimes it doesn't. I mean, you've drank with some of the most amazing palates and people in the world. Do you like every wine that they like? No.
No.
So to give people, like if you want people to explore and dive into this, then they've got to be comfortable going, you're super excited about this, but I just really don't like it, right? The response to that has to be, okay, let's talk about what you don't like, as opposed to, what? You don't like this? Dude, your palate's trash. You can't do that. Otherwise, you will not, nobody will want to do this. They'll drink craft beer, whiskey, and bourbon and call it a day. Yeah, so I think it's really like people, when it comes to wine, their first experience normally stays with them for quite some time. So if your first experience trying something that like the whole room is excited about and you just don't like it, I mean, you know, like that's possible. And I think that that's where pretension kind of alienates a lot of people.
But it also comes from knowledge too. I think people you know, wine has this big thing where it's like, I don't understand how to ask for what I know I like. So therefore I don't know anything. You know, do you find that?
Yeah, of course. And I think that that's where, you know, new faces, new people, new perspectives open up the wine world a little bit better because, you know, you have to ask someone what they don't like. Like, what didn't you like about this? Like, did it remind you of like drinking lemonade that needs more sugar or like just a really bad cup of tea that someone left the tea bag in too long, right? Because someone with knowledge knows that that's the difference between they think the wine is too acidic or the wine is too tannic, right?
Right,
right. But if you ask them that, they don't know that. So you have to start talking about wine with people in a language that they understand and make references that make sense to them. You know, like, I still can't tell you what a gooseberry smells like because I haven't smelled one yet. So if you tell me this wine smells like gooseberry, I'm going to go, okay, what else? Because I don't know what a gooseberry smells like. I have no reference for that.
Yeah, well, when I made Somme, I mean, part of the thing that made me, like, want to do it was the way this kind of coded language that everybody spoke, you know? Black currant bud and tomato leaf and, you know, all these just random-ass terms, which, you know, when you get into wine, it's not that that stuff isn't in the wine from a smell standpoint, but...
You don't know what a tomato leaf smells like because most people that buy tomatoes in the supermarket, we don't sell, like, you don't get a lot of vine-ripened tomatoes, right? They're still on the vine with the leaf. So where would you have ever smelled a tomato leaf before?
I don't know.
But I think that that's the beauty of wine, right? Like there has to still be the spaces where you can geek out like that, right? Because you've actually smelled those things. You know, I love cooking. I'm from Central America, grew up with a very, very strong West Indian community around me. So there are a lot of things that aren't foreign to me, right? Like tamarind and all these other things where it's also cultural. Like what's sour to me might not be sour to someone else. What's spicy to someone else is not spicy to me at all. So we also just have to give space to always recognizing that there is a universal language of wine, but people have to be given time and space to actually learn it and to make sense of it.
I like that. I like that a lot. So wait, tell me about a little bit of your background. So you're from where in the West Indies?
I am from Belize. So I was born in Belize in Central America.
Great scuba diving there. I've done quite a bit of diving there. Yeah.
Blue Hole's amazing. Yeah, it's just a beautiful little place, but it's a super unique country considering where it is in the world. It was a British protectorate till 1981, till right before I was born, ironically. Just gave my age away. But because of that, as a country, like one, it's the only country in that region where the national language is still English, yep. Although 90-something% of the country is bilingual in something else, either an indigenous language or Spanish or something else. But we also got the full bounty of everything that was being traded across the world. So all of the spices that were coming and were spread out through the West Indies, plus the culinary influence of the Mayans and the Incas. So it's just a hodgepodge of people and culture and community.
It was British Honduras, is that right? Before
that's right. Okay. Until September of 1981.
Yeah. It's a really fascinating country. It's a dangerous as hell place to drive, though. I'll be honest with you.
Listen to me. All of Central America is. Mexico's even worse. I don't drive there. It's scary. Everything's in the road. So
you were born there.
Yep, and we came to America when I was 4.
Interesting. Wow.
So I grew up in the Bronx. I'm a Bronx girl. That's where I grew up. The Northeast Bronx is kind of just another. Like the West Indies in America in a lot of ways. So much of what was normal, like the foods, the spices, the smells, the music, the accents, it was so familiar to me growing up. And so
well,
I think
your cultural identity, though, let's talk about this. I mean, so you're wow. How do you define your cultural identity?
I don't know. That's a great question, but I...
Not that it matters. I mean, not to pigeonhole, but it's just, I'm curious.
No, it's an interesting thing. And I mean, it speaks to intersectionality, right? It depends on what you're asking. I think that food and culture-wise, I'm 100% Caribbean. Like, that's what I grew up with. That's what I still do. You know, I go home to my parents and I still cook traditional dishes that I learned from my grandmothers. So I'm very much rooted in that culture. But as far as lived experiences, I mean, I grew up in America, in the Bronx. That's where I grew up until high school and college and really started to see, you know, meet people from other places and all of that stuff. So culturally, I'm certainly Caribbean, West Indian American, period.
I love
regionally,
this.
I'm a Bronx girl. I'm from New York. You can spend 10 minutes with me and probably figure that out. But I mean, that's an interesting question. I don't think it's the pigeonhole, but I think that identity, you know, especially with where we are in the world, it's always like, what are you, particularly when you have multiple ways that you can identify. Like someone had asked me, like, are you a woman first? Are you Black first? Are you an immigrant first? I'm like, I don't know. Pick one. They all work for me. I'm all of them, wholly. So it depends.
Well, this, I mean, this is like a perfect transition into your podcast that we're going to be launching here shortly. In fact, it's live now to subscribe to. So everybody should do that. It's called, why don't you say the name of your podcast?
A Glass for Every Palate. And I love that name.
I do too. It's great.
And your brother did such an amazing job on the artwork. Like, it's absolutely perfect. But
yeah, Brandon, who did the art for Into the Bottle and Psalm 3 and a bunch of stuff, he did your artwork, right? Yeah.
It's so crazy. I absolutely love it. He is amazing and captured the essence of really what I wanted to do with the podcast. And even, you know, before this, that's kind of what I tried to do with my Instagram page as well, is tell people, like, look, everybody, the wines that you enjoy will not be the same, but there's a wine out there for everyone. And if you talk to the people that are like the most visible or most notable or famous in wine, and you really hear the story about, like, not just how did you get into wine, but like, what was the bottle that took this from something you enjoyed or something you liked having to something that you were actually passionate about? And I always find those stories really, 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 really fascinating. And I think that when people hear some of the bottles that these folks started off drinking, it removes a lot of pretension. Like, I promise you, they weren't born drinking Burgundy.
So you're going to interview, what kinds of people are going to be on your podcast?
So, you know, it's funny, like, we talk about influential people. And I think that once you say influential, people think, oh, famous and really notable. And when we want to do that, right, I definitely want to talk to some of the top chefs and the top people in food and wine in the world. But influential to me really doesn't only mean the people that you know. Right? It's the people that are influencing change and culture and the way we view things. I think that you and Christina are influential people, right? You've opened up the world of wine by putting it on a screen where people could see it. There is endless stories of people all the time that their first foray into wine was after watching the Psalm documentary. So that's awesome. And so I think that there are chefs out there, you know, particularly a lot of women and a lot of people of color and just people in regions that people don't know about. You don't hear of these chefs unless they appear on Top Chef or they're in Food and Wine, or, and they're really doing great things. And the world of food and wine is colliding in very cosmic ways now. And it's really starting to showcase that food is the universal language and wine is the accompaniment. And I just think that those stories will really encourage more people to explore their palate, to try different wines, and to find the one that really resonates with them, and then just flourish from there.
I love it. So there's a couple things I want to talk to you about. You know, I want to talk about your wine. We can talk about some of my wines that did this, but can we tell a story about how I met you?
We've got to tell the story.
We premiered Psalm 3. Psalm 3 premiered all around the world, really, in these very small boutique screenings where we did a lot of wine and Q&As and the whole deal. And you were one of the first people to sign up for a ticket for that screening. And this was at Cork Buzz. And afterwards, Laura put together, what did she do? She did like a big blind tasting.
Yeah, it was a super big blind tasting. Great wines.
Great stuff. All the wines from the film were there and, you know, all sorts of really good Chablis. And it was really an amazing event. So we were all tasting, and I see you. I think you were talking to Sabato.
Yep. Am I Sabato and Dave Bruno.
So out of the corner of my eye, I see this like flame, like the part of the room lights up for half a second. And I turn my head and I'm sorry to tell this story.
We've got to tell the story. Okay, guys. We're going to do this in the way that like the video is doing now. So just picture, if you've never seen me before, you can totally look at my Instagram, but picture me, hair is on fire. Okay. That's what happened. And then record scratch, narrator, I bet you're wondering how I got here. Okay. So I'm talking to Sabato. I'm talking to Dave Bruno. We're talking about the wines. It's actually my first time meeting Sabato too. Super interesting. I go to Bar Taco a lot, which at the time Sabato was president of. So we were talking about that. And then I'm looking at both of them and their facial expressions aren't telling me anything, but something has changed. Sabato's standing. He's got a glass of wine in his hand. He's standing next to like an ice bucket. And Dave's just looking at me like, I got to say something, but I don't know what to say. So I'm trying to think like, is there food in my teeth? What is it? And then like Dave just goes, don't freak out, but your hair is on fire. Right. So I'm like, okay, split second decision, like mini thoughts in my head. One, this is par for the course for me. This is very on brand for some crazy, wacky shit like this to happen. But I'm also in a room full of people that I'm trying to connect with, right? So if I make a big spectacle out of it, now everybody knows what happens and I become the center of attention for the complete wrong reasons. Or I try to be very, very poised about this, do a little tap, make sure I'm not going to combust, and then excuse myself and step off to the ladies' room, freak out for a minute, pray that my hair isn't singed so bad that I cannot continue at this event, compose myself, and come back out. And that's exactly what I did. And I think when I came back out, Sabato was like, man, I'm really glad you're okay. Because I'm like, shit, if I throw a bucket of water on her, she's probably going to slap me and be really upset about it. But you handled that really well. I mean, what was I going to do? Like, it happened. I can't pretend that it didn't. But I mean, it's sort of just a life mantra too of like, it's not what happens. It's how you deal with it.
The way you dealt with this, I can't even tell. It was so... It was so sudden. I think, like, what, did you lean over a candle or something?
I was standing too close to a candle. There were these little tea light candles on the shelves. You know, Corpus.
You have this great hair. I mean, you have like this.
Right? Now I've cut all my hair off. Now, not because I set it on fire again, but yes, I had a big full head of curls. And that, yeah, I was just standing too close to a candle. I'm pretty tall. And yeah, tall girl problems. That happened. But I mean, in a weird way, who could forget me from that night because of that, right?
Nobody. I don't think anybody saw it happen besides myself.
Nobody did.
Sabato Sugarya and David Bruno. David Bruno is a publicist for fashion and for wine and restaurants. He works with Dustin
Amazing
Wilson.
Guy.
Yeah, really
Love
good guy.
Dave.
But like, you know, it is one of those things where it's like, holy shit, what do we do? I don't think I've ever seen anybody's hair just go up in flames.
Yeah. Me either.
you handled it very well. I'm sorry to tell that story.
You know what? If you can't, like, you have to be able to laugh at yourself, right? Even if you think about wine, like, think about Ian is never going to be able to live down the it smells like a can of freshly opened tennis balls, right? Never. He's literally never going to live that line down for as long as he lives.
Yeah, I don't think Ian's. I don't think Ian loves a lot of the.
I don't think so either. But. You know what? You've got to, and I just believe in that, like, fundamentally, and like, things go off rails. Like, things don't always go the way you plan them to be. Things happen. And you've just got to adjust. And I mean, that happens every vintage with wine, right? Here we go again. Like, you plan for a great growing season and then the weather just destroys you, right? You still got to harvest these grapes. You still got to make a wine. So much of like life and what we deal with is tied to this stuff. So there's no reason it shouldn't be approachable to everyone.
So funny. I mean, it just, you know, it's not fun. It's funny now.
Yes, it is.
At the time, it was like, holy shit. But I'm telling you, nobody even knew it happened. It was great.
Oh, man.
Okay. All right. So let's talk wines. Let's talk about some of the wines for you. Because you're going to hear other people's stories, and I kind of want to hear yours. I have to, you know, if you're a SOM TV listener and you like the stuff we make, you got to trust me on this girl that we are talking to right now. She is, aside from maybe having one of my favorite voices in the business, she has just the most approachable way to talk about wine that I've ever seen. I want to know what wine was it for you? Because you said food was your entry point, right?
Yeah.
So what wine was it where you were like, I want to pivot myself from fine dining and really throw myself into learning about wine and understanding wine? And
I'll never forget this bottle. I'll never forget this bottle. And since I've had it, I've never not had it in my house. Laura did this series at Corpus. It was around World Cup, actually, where she had this Raid the Cellar series, and she did one where it was like teams that would be playing each other in the World Cup. So she did Spain versus Portugal, right? And so I go to this tasting and it's interesting. There are a lot of different people there. I'm talking with people. And then we start going through these wine. She brings out a 1999 Chitas Tintas from Colares, right? Now, the concept of salt in wine was really weird to me at that point because I'm looking to taste like salt water, right? And that's not really what you're tasting. But the second I tasted this wine, I'm like, holy shit, this is salt. Like, this is how you can tell a wine, like an understanding, like, look, these roots are, these vines are deep. They're in the sand. They're right on the water. Like all of the picture that she had painted about where this wine was from, it was right there in the glass. And that was the moment where I was like, this stuff is crazy. This is really, really interesting. And I am enjoying everything about this wine, everything about the story. And it's infinitely better because I understand more about where in the world it's coming from and why it's tasting like this.
And so that's not an incredibly expensive wine either.
Not at all. I think it's 50 bucks.
Yeah.
I mean, and so it's 1999, which is when I graduated high school. Again, dating myself. But I've never not had a bottle of that wine since then. And I always, I talk, Laura remembers it too, because that is the wine that kind of flipped the switch for me from focusing on fine dining and really, really wanting to just absorb as much knowledge as I could about wine.
I think I have a similar thing with, with Lopez de Heredia's White Rioja. And I had this when I was, this is pre-Somm, but it was the first wine that I had. And I've spoken to this in the past, but it was, Viña Tendonia White Rioja that I never tasted anything like it. I mean, it was a wine that for the very first time tasting a wine, I thought to myself, I need to visit this place. I need to see where this is made. I need to see who made it. I need to understand how the hell they came up with the way to make this. That's the wine that really, 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 almost above all others, that I would say
that one did it.
Yeah, it really opened up. It opened up a door that in the next room had 1,000 doors, I walked into the 1,000 door room because of that wine. And so that's the one. And since then I've filmed with Maria Lopez and I have many, many, many bottles of that White Rioja sitting. And that, again, it's not a very expensive wine. You can get it, some of the levels of it you can get for 25, 30 bucks a bottle. But it's just so unique and it is so different than anything else that you can, get a hold of. You should mention, you're going to interview Laura on your podcast.
Yes. Laura and I from going to Corpus, and that's the beautiful thing about wine. Like so many people have asked, like, how did you even get into this? And, I mean, I'm personable, I'm friendly to people, but I feel like wine is such a space where if you just get past the initial like feelings of apprehension or pretentious, like people love it when you ask questions about wine. People love being asked questions about wine. And just, from that point on, I would sign up for a ton of classes at Corkbuzz and always be there and asking extra questions. And, Laura and I have developed a great friendship since then. But I think that it's the environment that she's created at Corkbuzz for learning is amazing. Absolutely amazing.
There's a lot of people, and I can speak to this pretty seriously. There's a lot of people in this, I guess, business, which I found myself, I can't tell if I'm a part of it or peripherally walk around it every day. I'm not sure, but there are people who walk the walk, and then there are people who talk. And Laura is somebody, a lot of people say they want to educate, they want to help, they want to do it. But, there are people like, Dylan's another one, where like, if you hit them up, they help you. They really do. Laura is somebody, though, with a location who really, really brings you in and tries very hard to.
Yep.
I don't know, she wants. I know her now as a very, very good friend, and she's on lots of Somm TV stuff, and she is. She's been in what?
We got to do a blind tasting with her.
We did. We did one with her. And
No. Me and her.
Oh, yeah, sure. We should do it.
She has taught me so much about what I know about blind tasting.
Yeah, no, I love this.
But I mean, even, it's funny that you mentioned like creating a physical space for it. Even if you don't want to go, even if you're not going to Corkbuzz for like classes, right? Just the opportunity to be able to go, I don't know if I like this. All right, well, let me pour you a little bit of it and see what you like. And to have someone pour you a little bit of it and you be comfortable saying, eh, I'm not in love with this. And them going, all right, well, what don't we love? Like, what would you like more of? As opposed to pointing out like, well, maybe you're not getting the notes of gooseberry and forest floor or whatever else. You know what I mean? Like the simple pivot of how you approach getting somebody to try something different. Because, I mean, you have to try a lot of wines to find what you like. You do.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot that you don't like. But when you start falling in love, and then, I mean, once you start finding those bottles, then you start falling in love with an entire country, right? Because you realize how vast it is and how different the wines from different parts are. But that initial, I don't want to say olive branch, but it sort of is, right? But like that initial, like, dude, it's okay for you to not like any of this. It's okay for you to tell me, I don't want to spend that much. It's okay for you to say, I don't know what I want at all, right? Having like some comfort that you won't be judged for saying things like that, total game changer.
And have you found the wine business to be like that? Do you find
absolutely.
That you, oh, really?
Absolutely. And I always say this as a caveat because of how I came into wine, right? Like I came in as a consumer, you know, I came in paying to go to classes and stuff like that. But even at tastings, like I've had people be complete jerks to me, like complete jerks, like literally not hello, but so who invited you?
No, really?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So who invited you?
You know, do you want to know something, how dangerous this is? My frame of reference in the world is Sam. So I just have to say, like, you know, when I made Sam, and I'll say this over and over again.
Of course.
But when I did make that film, I remember people going, wine world is so pretentious. And I had half the people going, wow, here's a movie that's not pretentious. And the other half were like, F this movie, it's pretentious. And I think one of the problems and why what you just said is so dangerous is one person out of 1,000 really, really damages the water for everybody. You know, if one person acts that way, it's like everybody thinks the water's all sour because of that one person. And it gives wine the shittiest reputation as this thing that's pretentious. And really, it's just really subjective. Right. That's the thing. They're saying the wrong word. And so, you know, when you see, you know, pinky up, British accent, wearing a suit, and you act like it's not accessible unless you're part of a club or you belong to this golf course or you understand or you're a wine club member here or this or that.
Right.
I mean, that's just so dangerous. I've been very fortunate that I have not experienced that, but I'm also really pushy as a filmmaker. So.
Right. I mean, it does happen, and perception is reality, right? And I think that what is happening now and the beauty of like the whole new cast of some TV streaming is that everybody can connect with somebody on something, right? So you don't, it removes that idea that it's just, you know, this very hoity-toity and my God, if the label isn't facing out, it's a travesty. And if I don't know the difference between Saint-Emilion and Saint-Joseph, then I am just the word. That takes all of it away when you see faces that resonate with you and you hear voices that resonate with you and speak to you.
And by faces, you mean people of color or?
No, yes, that. But I also mean just people that aren't like everyone else that you've ever seen in wine. You know, Sarah is a great example of it. Like Sarah is a woman. She's a woman.
Sarah Thomas.
Sarah Thomas.
One of my favorite people.
She is just the best.
When my daughters grow up, I want them to be Sarah Thomas.
She's so everything. But it's like, okay, she's a woman of color. She's not black. She's worked in literally like the mecca of fine dining restaurants. But if you talk to her about wine, she isn't pretentious at all, right? And I think that that is actually a part of what, it's actually a good thing that's come out of this pandemic is I think that although we're all experiencing like some level of Zoom fatigue because we're just over it in a lot of ways, I think that so many people, so many classes, so many spaces are now accessible to people that never would have had the opportunity, and that's black, white, or other, to attend a lot of these seminars and classes are now accessible to them.
Yeah. No, it's great. I mean, the whole thing with SOM TV, I think, and we're not there at all, but the whole point is to democratize this stuff. I think there's also, look, social media has some problems. But let's just, the one thing I want to say that is good about it is that there's checks and balances now. You know, I mean, you can't just get away with going, I'm the keeper of knowledge anymore.
Yeah.
You can't just be some old wine critic or food writer. And the best of the critics and food writers that are still old and adapting and whatever else, they're good at their job anyway.
Right.
You know, there's like this insecurity that people have to hold knowledge from other people when if you're good at your job, you're going to have a job. I don't know what the insecurity is. So,
and you're going to not do this one day, right? Like there will come a time where you won't be here anymore. So if your knowledge stays with you, then what?
Also, exactly. If you don't pass it on, no one's ever going to
talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, and then of course to speak to being Black, you know what I mean? Like, of course, no one can see me, but I'm a Black woman. Go figure.
I am not. Go figure.
I think that it's really, really important, you know, to also representation matters, right? The fact that people have been able to get away with saying, oh, we didn't invite any Black SOMs to be at this event because we didn't know any. Well, did you look for any? Because there are a lot of them. They're not the majority, but there are a lot of them. So if you didn't find them, you probably just didn't look for them. Right?
Right.
And the same thing is true for, you know, brands and their partnerships with influencers and all of this stuff. Like you keep picking the same people because you have the same criteria and there's only certain people that meet that criteria, right? If you say, well, the account has to have 10,000 followers. Well, there aren't many, you know, Black food and wine accounts that have 10,000 followers. So are you just never going to work with anyone Black because of that? So, you know, I think that we're at an interesting time. I think that the time that we're at, there's going to be some growing pains for it, but I think the industry at large will be better for it. I think that we'll get back to a lot more enjoyment of wine. I think we'll have a lot of different voices speaking to a lot of different people, making wine much more accessible. And I think a lot more people will have fun. With wine.
And also think about it. If you're a brand and you're bringing in African Americans and Asians and I don't know, any spectrum of people, you have more customers.
It makes good business sense.
Yeah, right? No shit. I mean, to me, I don't even understand. Like, I can never purport to even walk an inch in your shoes or anyone else. But I can also, the one thing I can say is that. What the hell is wrong with people that they would not want a larger customer base? You know, it's just, you know,
we need a whole other podcast for what's wrong with people that feel that way.
Well, I certainly have enough wrong with me that I'm not the
person. A whole other podcast for that. But I mean, it's the idea that if more people get in, then my experience is diminished, right? Like then I'm not as exclusive as I was before because now instead of this being an intimate tasting with 20 people, there's now 50 people here, right? Or now that there are more people interesting, my friends don't get all the tickets. There are other people at the event too. Like, you know, you got to get over yourself.
Listen, wine is a class system anyway, though, just based on price.
Right.
So like, and I don't, you know, look, right now, that's clearly got some serious racial implications. I don't know about the price, but just the fact that there's not a lot of access to the wine world or the food world or the back of the kitchen, the front of the house, all that stuff. But the real question is, no matter what happens, there's still going to be bottles that are $2,500 a piece. There's still going to be places that are hard to get to and really expensive to travel to. There's still going to be some form of inequality. It's not like it's, you know.
Right. But you don't have to drink those wines to enjoy.
That's true.
Wine,
that's
right?
True.
I've never had DRC ever.
I have very rarely had it.
Right. Like I've literally never had it. Now in my head, I am convinced.
I make a prom. Oh, you're going to have it with me. By the way, I want to make, you know, that statement I just made, I have had the first time I ever tried DRC, a very, very, very intoxicated Eric Railsback walk up. I don't know if you know who Eric is.
I do know Eric.
walked up to me. He handed me a glass of wine. It was while I was filming Psalm 1. And he said, what do you think of this, motherfucker? And I put this glass to my lips and I tasted it. And I said, you know, I was in the middle of working. Jackson, who you've met, and I were filming. And so he put this glass in my hands and I tasted it. I said, it's really good. And then it turned out it was like a 81 Eshizo.
Holy shit.
Yeah. But that was the first time I ever had it. Was just this, like, what do you think of this, MF-er? And then, you want to know the only other time I've had DRC?
When you were there?
Well, yeah, when I filmed Into the Bottle. That's it. I've never had it.
That is my favorite of the Psalm films, by the way.
I would never – look, I don't want to get into this, but I'm going to tell a quick story. It's not like I knew Albert de Villene. I was connected to him. I went to him. I said, on the day of, all was set up is that I was going to do an interview with him. On the day of, I said, listen, I would like to do this. I'd like you to open up a bottle. I made the Psalm movie. And he goes, my wife loves that movie. And I was like, your wife has heard of the Psalm movie? And he goes, yeah, she's heard of it. She's an American. And she says, I need to watch it. So he watched it and really liked it. And he goes, let me open up something really special for you guys. And he starts naming all these things. And I stopped him and I said, I don't want to be rude, sir, but I don't want you to open up a bottle that you think is the best. And I will never forget him just staring at me and going, what do you want?
Right.
I want you to open up something that was not a good vintage for you. And he looked at me and he goes, well, officially, DRC does not have bad vintages.
Of course not.
And I said, yeah, but some of them had to be harder than others.
Right.
And he said, yeah, okay, I know what I'm going to open. And we walked downstairs and he opened up that 2004 just Eshizo, not Grand Eshizo, not, but he offered to open up, geez, old Montrachets. He offered to open up Domaine de Loire Contis from, you know, the 70s and things like that because, you know, but
that's what the people want.
Opened up that other bottle and yeah. He tasted it. And that's, I'm so happy to hear you say it's your favorite thing because it was a very difficult segment because I didn't want it to just be a gimmick in the thing. I wanted it to be the most expensive wine in the world delivered what I wanted for him to just look and say, wine is food. It's an element. It's simple. It's not supposed to be this big deal. And it really provides this kind of undercurrent in the movie that I think is the message.
Yeah.
You know, you get to the end of the film. So anyways, I just want to say, when I say you're going to drink DRC with me, I mean it, but I don't know where I'm going to get it from.
We'll find it. Don't worry. We will combine powers and we'll find it. But like that's, you know, that's kind of why I'm so passionate about Spain, right? Because I really think that Spain is probably the best country to start your wine journey on because it's affordable. Even the very best of the country.
You are so right.
Oh, is relatively, and I say relatively because it's relative. I don't know what's affordable to someone else. But, oh, but I know,
you know, you can get fantastic $12, $15 bottles of wine.
Absolutely.
From like Rueda, you know what I mean? And, you know.
You can drink great wines from the country. You can drink an array of grapes. You can drink from cooler climates, Mediterranean climates, higher elevation. You know what I mean? You get all of what people geek out about wine from a country where if you like it, great, drink more of it. It's not going to cost you a lot. And if you don't like it, you are not going to feel like, God damn it, I spent $80 on this bottle and I hate it. So, you know, I think that more exposure to countries like Spain, like Portugal, like New Zealand, you know, all these countries in the New World where I'm not saying anything against, you know, drinking the best of Spain and the best of Italy, but those are exclusive by price and availability, right? I live in New York.
Yeah, but the best is so subjective. I mean,
it's subjective. Look,
if you like...
I should say most coveted. That's probably the better way to describe it.
A lot of the wines you're talking about are probably Bordeaux blends. You know, they're probably, yep. There's nothing wrong with that, but I'm saying I want to be careful how I word this. They're not what you're describing as the wine that you described as salty. They're not the white Rioja. They're not some obscurely beautiful, delicate $25 bottle of wine from the Canary Islands, which would blow people away.
Away. But, I mean, would you agree with me also? Like, I think that if you're drinking those wines, I think you really need a lot of, you probably won't enjoy them much unless you have a pseudo extensive knowledge about why they're even special, right?
Definitely. Definitely. That's like, the other problem. That's the problem with wine. But there's a lot of food like that too. And you know,
of course, of course. Like, I don't think everyone likes caviar, right? It's fish eggs. It sounds gross. I
do.
Love it. My God. The thing
I have a whole film coming out about caviar.
I can't wait, because I was excited about the one about uni and I was not disappointed. But those are not things that, like, you're going to go from, look, maybe today I'll try my steak medium rare, even though I normally get it medium well. You're not going to go from that to caviar in a day, right? That doesn't happen that way. And it doesn't happen that way in wine either. So I think that, like, when people, even my own friends have done it, right? Like, someone will text me like, oh, I need a bottle of wine, something nice. Okay, well, what's nice? I'll give them a bottle from Spain, some Lopez de Heredia, right? So you can get 2004, 2005 now for 40, 50 bucks. Great bottle, very enjoyable. Oh, I was looking for something a little nicer. No, you weren't. You wanted to spend more. And if you want to spend more, then you don't need me. Just go into the wine shop and tell them what you want to spend. And they're going to upsell.
Oh, you're so right. Oh, man.
You know what I mean? Like, we have to get out of this idea that a $40 bottle of wine is cheap and bad, because it just isn't.
Well, 40, I mean, you know, in my house now, I'll be honest, 40 is expensive for a bottle of wine.
Because you know more, right?
Well, that's true.
You know more. So you know these other smaller producer or these other regions that people don't know about yet. And that's why opening up this world in that way is so important. Because otherwise, you're just going to get upsold every time. And you're going to be told that, well, it's not a good bottle of champagne if it's under $100. Well, that's not true.
So not true. I mean, right. There are great champagnes that are over $100.
Absolutely. Particularly if you're trying to make an impression, then bring something that they haven't even heard of yet. You know what I mean? Get some grower stuff that's going to cost you maybe 50, 60 bucks, but it's going to blow their minds and they've never heard of it yet. Be that person.
Yeah, I like that a lot. That's a very kind of a Sami attitude, you know, but like, I will also say, you know, there's big champagne houses that people don't realize, you know, Charles Heidsieck, there's like 15-year-old wine in that bottle. That's a $50 bottle of wine. It's like incredible, incredible bottle of wine. And they produce on a, I don't know. I just think it's, you know,
comes from knowledge though. Like all of these things that we know, like if you don't know that champagne normally starts with a bunch of wine from back vintages and all that stuff, then you just don't know that. Right. So you have no point of reference for that. You just go, well, I know the big house. So I know Veuve, I know Moët and Chandon. I said that so poorly. Well, I'm not doing a French accent on everything. But, you know, that's what you know.
I'll forgive you. Belize is an English-speaking country.
Right? Just give me this one. French is not a language that's good for me. I try, though. But if that's all you know, then that's what you buy, right? And I think what happens is it's almost like criminalizing you. It's like, oh, God, you're going to buy a bottle of Veuve. Like, I've done it because my friends now know better. So I'm like, do not buy that. I've given you guys plenty other options to buy. And it's not that Veuve is bad champagne. It's just that's not the only champagne out there that you can drink. So be open to trying something else. And that's when people love Veuve. I'm like, that's a particular style, right? So let's talk about that style. And if you like that style, here are others that you can try. And if you want to try something that's totally different, where the predominant grape is something else, why don't we try this one? But I put it on myself to kind of, if I'm going to say, don't just drink that, it's my responsibility, I feel, to give you the knowledge so that you can make an informed decision about what else you want to try. And I think that's the part that often gets left out, is that we just, it's kind of like, oh God, who drinks that? But you're not willing to share any knowledge to encourage them or give them any reason to try anything else.
I mean, again, I think this comes from an insecurity thing. I think what you're talking about is that's, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but I do think people are afraid of somebody coming in and being smarter than them, looking better than them. And I think that's the, you know, I also have the advantage of coming in not as a wine professional and being able to look at the wine business from the outside slightly. And I'm still there as much as I can be, at least.
I mean, same for me, right? I've never worked in a restaurant ever. I came into the industry as a consumer and just meeting and talking. And honestly, the worst treatment I've had by people have been other guests. It's been at tastings where I'm tasting a zero dosage wine and some bro is like, you know, that doesn't have any sugar, right? Well, A, I didn't ask you. B, zero dosage would imply that. And C, let's unpack why out of everyone standing here right now, you made a decision just looking at me that was information that A, I didn't know, and B, you had to be the one to tell me. So I think that, you know, to say like, oh, well, these spaces are open. I'm like, well, is it? Because at the same time, if that rep doesn't, you know, like, go, yeah, we've talked about that already. This is the third one she's trying. Well, then you're kind of giving him a pass for that too. So I think just mindfulness and like, while you aren't treating people poorly, you have to understand that. And I think that that happens a lot, is that people think because I'm opening and I'm welcoming to everyone, that that's what the wine world is. And that's a crock of shit, right? Everybody still knows that there's a lot of pretension. There's a lot of gatekeeping. And there's a lot of people that really do not want the wine world to become more diverse or inclusive. They want to keep it as their exclusive inner circle of people that enjoy this luxury product, and that's it.
But this is why there are people like you, Shakira.
I'm trying.
No, you're not trying. You're doing. You're not trying at all. It's also why, why you're here. I mean, no. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's. Look, all right, so we started a weekly line with you on Somme TV.
So much fun.
So much fun, man. I mean, you did a great job. The first episode, I think, is up. Well, no, at the airing of this, several episodes will be up. But, you know, let's talk about a couple quick, really fast. Let's talk about a couple quick bottles people should give a shot.
All right. It's rosé season. We know that everyone's obsessed with a lot of rosé. One of the wines I featured was the Femme Pet Nat of Malbec from Cahors. That shit is so good. If you like beer, if you like kombucha, if you just like something that's a little bit different from just your average bottle of wine, you've got to give that a shot. I think it's like $17. It's so freaking good. I can't drink enough of it.
I think, what do you think is the right price for a rosé? Like, what's the sweet spot?
Honestly, I think if you're paying over $20, you have to know why, right? It has to be a producer or something that you're paying more for. Otherwise, $20 is a sweet spot for a bottle of rosé. Anything over that, you're paying for the bottle, you're paying for the brand name, or you're paying for like just a crazy place and domain or whatever. I mean, I love Domaine Ott. I love Domaine Tampier. Those are $50 bottles of rosé. I don't think anybody should be buying that unless they love those wines, like really love them.
Yeah.
Other than that, drink some $20. Listen, people hate Whispering Angel. I don't drink it very much just because I know a bunch of others, but there's nothing wrong with that rosé. Right? That rosé tastes good.
When it's on sale, I buy it.
Yeah. Gerard Bertrand's Cote de Rosé. I think that's $15. That's really good. Well,
oh, no, it's great.
Provence style rosé. Like, what's wrong with drinking that?
That Cote de Rose is in my house right now. It's in my fridge.
It's really good. I had it on Sunday. Like, the people, you know, like, because the bottle's shaped like a rose, oh, it's gimmicky. Have you tasted it? Because if you taste it, it's just really good rosé.
We're also filming. I should be honest. We're filming with Gerard coming up here. Because this guy, you're talking about a guy who's like a massive rugby, a really successful French rugby player.
He's a really big guy. I don't think people realize that.
Yeah, well, rugby players generally are. But
yeah,
we're filmed with him. We should take you to France for that.
I mean, I'm here for it. He was here in New York, I want to say last fall. And we went to an event and met him. And he poured some crazy Chardonnay. They're doing such funky things. But like, that's what I'm saying. If you get to know a producer, then whether you're drinking their entry level or like the best of the best they have to offer, they're just good wines because they're made well. And I think that's where I try to also be clear in that. Like when I, you know, on my own Instagram page before we did the Psalm stuff, I did that where I went through a bunch of rosés at a ton of different price points. Like, look, these are all good. It just depends on what you feel like spending or drinking on a day. But I don't think you should spend more than 24 rosé.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you on that, especially since I have two little kids and we're on a budget and life is what it is. I agree.
And I mean, truth is, you're not sipping rosé to be overly intellectual about it, right? Like, it's just, you're just chugging it, really. Or at least my friends and I are, and my family. That's what we're doing. We're just going to pound those back and have a good time. So, I think that, like, separating out what people are paying for, like when you're paying for summer in a bottle, which I actually love, but
that's like the Hamptons.
Yeah, line, but right? It's that expensive because look at the bottle. One, it's made in America, so the cost of production is infinitely higher, right? And the bottle is gorgeous, but money went into producing that bottle. That's why it's so expensive. It's right. If it was in a plain bottle, it'd probably be $20. And a lot of their other wines are in plain bottles and are under $20. And you should try those too because they're delicious. Summer in a Bottle is a great rosé, but it is expensive. And right. I do get that if you're used to spending $8 to $10 on a bottle of rosé, to get you to jump to pay almost $30, I can't really justify that, to be honest. Even though I can tell you, look, it tastes really good. It's super enjoyable. If you buy that and you're underwhelmed, you're going to be like, you know what? She just likes to tell people to spend a lot of money on wine. I'm not doing that.
I don't think of it. Well, we should say you should watch. Okay, so Shakira hosts Weekly Wine on Psalm TV. You are the host of A Glass for Every Palate. I am so honored to have you as part of this team.
This is super cool, and I don't commit to things or join things for the sake of it. You know, I think it's really important that people also understand that this is something that you guys were thinking about before the pandemic. It wasn't kind of this trigger reaction like, oh God, we need to put some brown faces and women up there. I think it's really, really important to say that because, you know, people are struggling with now seeing tokenism and things like that. So I think it's really important to say that this was in the works. This is something that you wanted to do. And I am super, super excited to be a part of the family and just be in a space and in this project with such amazing people.
Shakira, if I had heard your voice, you would have done the voiceover in my last feature film. I have to just say one last thing. I love your voice.
I just think I can
listen to you read stories anytime. You're the best. All right. Well, we need to talk more. Everybody needs to subscribe to her podcast. Okay. Subscribe to her podcast. Anywhere you get your podcasts, on Apple, on everywhere else. It is called A Glass for Every Palate. And you need to watch Weekly Wine, and she's going to be in a ton of stuff more coming up on Psalm TV and some of our films and everything else. Also, I look forward to drinking DRC with you.
Dude, I'm going to hold you to that. Like, we're going to do this. You know what's funny? We're going to have to do another podcast because I feel like we're going to fall ass backwards into a bottle, one or both of us.
Yeah.
And it's going to be totally unplanned and we won't even know how it happened, but it's going to happen.
I have a big ass. I hope it's a good sized bottle.
Same. Same.
All right, that's it. We'll do a podcast, you and I drinking DRC. That's
yes,
it. It's happening.
Done.
It's going to be an expensive podcast, but we're making it happen.
Every podcast.
Yeah. Thank you, Shakira.
Oh, this was so much fun.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Really, really means a lot that you take time out of your day and listen to us ramble. Don't forget, psalmtv.com, you can gift subscriptions, and we dropped our prices. So please, 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 spread the word. Tell your dog, your cat, your mom. And mom, if you're still listening, tell everybody, please. New podcast network launching. Here's just a few of what we have coming. We have Shakira Jones's new podcast, A Glass for Every Palate. You should subscribe where you get your podcasts. We have Sabato Sagaria's podcast, Your Weekly Cocktail, which is great. The premiere of the trailer for that comes out soon. He makes cocktails with celebrities and major people in the wine and food business, and they center a show around how to make it, and they send ingredients out to everybody so you can make the cocktail yourself at home. It's going to be a lot of fun. Also, Jill Zamorski has Reading and Drinking, which is the first wine book review podcast, and it is great. She does not hold anything back. And then finally, we also have The History of Wine, hosted by Matthew Kaner. Matt Kaner is a Los Angeles-based sommelier, and you've seen him on a ton of Psalm TV material. And he is going to be going region by region of how these places were created and who the key figures were. You're going to want to tune in. It's going to be a great one. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and be safe out there.